accession number 18333, Reel 1.
Major Gunton, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Gerrard's Cross in Buckinghamshire.
Which year was this?
1930.
Could you tell me, first of all, how you came to be in the army and when, please?
I joined as a private soldier into the Royal Norfolk Regiment in 1947, just after I left school, where I was at Christ Hospital. I then applied for a National Service Commission in Colchester, where I was doing my basic training, and went to Eton Hall, having passed the test. I then took at Eton Hall a RCB to get a regular commission, and I passed that as well. And I went to a holding company at Mons in Aldershot, waiting to be called forward to go to Sandhurst. And in 49, I actually went to Sandhurst and did my 2 years training.
Why had you gone in for the army in the first place?
Well, that actually is rather amusing. My father was in the RAF, and I wanted to actually join the RAF. And when at school, my headmaster was going up to Cranwell to test or examine people, and he mentioned to the commandant that he had a keen young man who wasn't very bright, but would like to join the RAF. And the commandant had me up there. I was flown up there. And I stayed for about a week in his house, where they tested me in various things, and finally they decided my mathematics wasn't good enough. And so I wouldn't have really got on that way. And I then decided I'd try for the army. I always wanted a service career of some sort. And I went to Sandhurst and was commissioned in 1951, February.
Now, when you were commissioned, did you go to the Norfolk Regiment?
I was commissioned into the Royal Norfolk Regiment. I was interviewed by the colonel of the regiment, General Hayes, who actually my wife is a daughter of. But I hadn't met her then. And I was accepted by the colonel and was commissioned into the regiment, as I said, in February 51.
How and when did you go to Korea?
After I was commissioned, I was sent on various platoon courses, weapons, which was in those days done down here in Hythe, the School of Musketry, and then the tactics course at Warminster. The battalion had been earmarked for Korea to go in October. And so I was doing all my courses prior to joining the actual battalion, and I didn't do that until about July, I suppose, of 51 in Dover.
Can you tell me about the journey to Korea, please, and the preparations you had to make for going?
I was told that I was going to be the anti-tank platoon commander. I had no experience on anti-tank weaponry. But the battalion was fairly short of officers, regular officers, and we were very much a sort of national service composition. An awful lot of the troops were national service, and quite a few of the officers. Anyway, I was given the anti-tank platoon to run, And preparation, there was very, very little, because we went, as I said, in October. And so I didn't have, apart from the two courses, weaponry and tactics, I didn't really have much chance to sort of practice any tactics with anti-tank weaponry. We sailed out on the Empire Orwell, and we took nearly a month to do that, stopping at Aden, Colombo, Singapore, Hong Kong, and finally we arrived at Pusan in the end of October.
What was the voyage like?
Pretty good, actually. Not for the troops. I reckon our troops have pretty rough time in the bottom of the holds, and the weather's not too good. But yes, we had a cabin of four of us. It was a fairly comfortable existence at sea. We did go through the tail end of a monsoon between Colombo and Singapore. That was fairly rough, and there were a lot of very ill troops as a result of it. But no, we quite enjoyed it. It was a sort of relaxation before we actually arrived. We tried to train as much as possible. I mean, we'd fire our weapons, rifles, over the edge of the ship, firing at balloons and things like that. We tried to keep as fit as possible by taking as much exercise as possible. But again, one's somewhat limited in space on a ship of that size. It was quite a big one, but not particularly easy to get round.
Did you have reservists in the battalion?
I suppose we must have had some, but we were made up in numbers from the IUR, their national servicemen, who had only just sort of arrived and joined the battalion before they were relieved by us out in Korea. So, I mean, I had about 15 Royal Ulster Rifle soldiers in my platoon.
How did they fit in?
Very well. They were extremely good lads. Actually, I didn't command the anti-tank platoon for very long. It was rather an unfortunate incident. When we arrived in Korea, we went up to a camp in reserve. It was actually the first, we were the first people to use it. It was called Britannia Camp. And we trained for about a month before we went up into the line. And one day I was firing for the first time my anti-tank platoon. We were using the hillside as a target. And shortly after we started firing, there was a call from divisional rear echelon to Div Main saying they were under fire. And it so happened that they were, 20 miles behind the lines. And divisional Main said, "Don't talk nonsense, you can't be under fire." The chap at the rear said, "Right, listen to this." And he stuck his telephone outside the tent or wherever he was in. And there was a crump as a shell landed not very far from them. And in fact, my gunners weren't that accurate either, or well trained, as it turned out. And they'd overshot with a couple of shells over the top. Luckily, no one was hurt. But it did cause a bit of a consternation, to say the least. And I then suggested that they got someone who was well-versed in anti-tank weaponry, and I caught a platoon instead, which actually suited me down to the ground.
Which platoon was that?
One platoon. A company.
Were they mostly Norfolk men?
No, as I was saying, there were a lot of Royal Ulster Rifles as well. I mean, we had a large number given to us or posted to us, as they'd only just arrived up from Hong Kong to join their own battalion, which was going home.
Now, what were your first impressions of Korea as a country?
That was fairly easy to answer. It was dirty. The hills were extremely steep. It was very hot. It was also extremely cold in winter. And it rained far too much. The complete extremes of climate. I mean, I wouldn't recognize the country now if I went back. It must have changed out of all proportion.
What did you do before the unit went into the front line?
We trained. Basic tactics and things like that. And got ourselves really fit after the month on board the boat.
Was the training much different from what it would have been in England?
Only in so much that a completely different topography. The country was so hilly, and far more different from anything you'd find in southern England, anyway, and certainly East Anglia.
What kind of briefing were you given about the war before you went into the front line?
It had become a fairly static war by the time we got there. And it was what I imagine the First World War might have been, with long lines of trenches, communication trenches, dugouts, which one lived in. But the briefing that we got was basically that we were there to try and stop the rot of communism getting further south and to stop it. We were told that we would be fighting, if we did fight, against Chinese and Korean. And in the main, it turned out that we came across Chinese more than Korean. Most of the time we were there, I suppose we were about 1,000 yards apart. There were occasions where we were much closer, but majority of the time it was, I would have thought, about 1,000 yards apart, the two lines. And the Chinese were very much the same as us. Line of communication trench, barbed wire and anti-personnel mines in front of the positions. And we spent most of our time patrolling. I reckon that in the year I was there, I did about 51 patrols. And they were either recce patrols in the main, but quite often there were fighting patrols that we had to do as well.
How was a patrol conducted, typically?
Well, a recce patrol would consist of an officer and four or five men. And one would get as close to an enemy position as one could and listen and count and see what movement there was on their side. Fighting patrols were anything up to a platoon in size, and you went out with the express purpose of hitting the enemy and trying to capture a prisoner.
Which were the more common, the recce patrols or the fighting patrols?
Recce patrols were the more common. I suppose I did about 40 recce patrols, and the remainder 11 fighting patrols. But it was an average of going out at least once a week, and as I was in hospital for 2 months, and we didn't go into the line for the first month, that was 51 patrols in 9 months. So it was quite quite heavy load.
Which did you prefer, recce patrols or fighting patrols?
I was wounded on a recce patrol, and on fighting patrols I was completely unscathed. But no, I think probably the recce patrol was the more interesting one, in so much that you were trying to find out information. I don't think anyone really particularly likes a battle as such. But if you had to do it, then so be it. That was it.
Was it easy to get information?
Do you want me to talk about the occasion I was wounded? Because
Please. That
brings it out quite
yes.
heavily. Yes, in a way it was. We went out on this particular patrol, and we had to go down a valley, and on the top of the valley was on two sides of a spur. The spur was occupied at various times by ourselves and by the Chinese, but we moved in and out of it fairly frequently. On this occasion, we were patrolling down the left-hand side of the spur, coming up to the main end of the valley. We then rose up and climbed up the spur and took up a position on a track, on either side of the track, which we knew the Chinese used. And sure enough, after we'd been there about an hour, a Chinese patrol came down this track. Now, we took note of their numbers, and there were about 15, I think. And I couldn't make my mind up what to do, because I thought, having actually got them more or less in my sights, so to speak, although I was only there on a recce patrol, we might pull a fast one on them and catch them as they come back. So we waited several hours, and towards first light, the patrols came back along this path on the same track. I let them go right through until the last couple came along, and we then opened fire, killed one, and nearly got the other one, but he managed to escape into the undergrowth. And I was then caught because they had a tail end Charlie who we'd not taken into account. And a grenade was thrown, which landed beside me. Luckily, it was a Chinese grenade, i.e. a stick grenade, and not a 36, which they had captured quite a few of ours. Anyway, this stick grenade went off, and I've got shrapnel to this day in my leg. But I was carried out, and we got home all right, being mortared most of the way back by the Chinese, so they knew roughly where we were. And we got back, and I was evacuated to hospital for 6 weeks. Partly in Korea, in a Norwegian MASH, and then evacuated to Kiri to to the military hospital in Kure. I was there for about another 3 weeks, I suppose, and then I went back to the battalion.
What difference would it have made if it had been one of the British grenades?
Well, for 36 mils, it is oval-shaped in segments and very much more powerful explosive. And probably I would have been killed because it was touching me when it went off and probably blown my leg off. If it, as it, the Chinese ones, they were made of, they were on a stick, sort of shaped round charge, made out of tin, with some explosive obviously in it, and you pulled a ring at the bottom of the stick, and that set the grenade off, and you then threw it. Mind you, you could throw them a long way with a stick, because got quite good leverage. Further, you could throw a British grenade. But as I say, a British one would have caused much more damage.
So the tail end Charlie who threw the grenade must have been a pretty accurate throw.
Debatable. I mean, it may have been just luck.
Was anybody else wounded in the same explosion?
No. As I say, they don't do all that much damage. A loud bang and bits of tin sort of fly off, but they don't. They're not going to do as much damage as a British grenade would have done or an American grenade.
Were you in a state of shock when it exploded?
No, I was more angry than anything else, I think. We radioed a message for mortar fire to, or gunfire to cover our way out. And I reported that I'd been hit, and in fact, a patrol was sent out to help us get back in. But in fact, we would have got back. The only thing that really infuriated me was when the people came out to us, I was shoved on a stretcher. And as we made our way back, gunfire following us all the way, every time shells started coming over, I was dropped, and they dashed to cover the sides of the hill. So I was left out in the open, but I'm perfectly safe. But this has been a direct hit.
So what did your commanding officer think when he heard that you had opened fire instead of sticking to the recce nature of the patrol?
No, it was accepted. They thought it was a justifiable chance.
Who decided whether or not you should go out on patrol? Was it up to you or
somebody
else?
No, that was done entirely from battalion. Battalion headquarters would state what they wanted in the way of a patrol, whether it be fighting, recce, or whatever. Ambush patrol, perhaps. And then the company, which was patrol company for that week, would provide the patrol to go out. Our positions, to start with, were beneath a feature called 355, which was quite a tall hill, very steep one. And another feature on our right, 354. 354 was occupied by the KOSB, and 355 was occupied partly by us. My company was in between these two features and at the bottom of the two features, with this spur running up in between the two features and making two small valleys on either side of the spur, running up towards the Chinese position. And we used to get shelled quite a lot. And they would do quite a lot of patrolling as well, trying to find out information about us. And we put out a large amount of wire in front of us, covered by fire, and also there were a large number of booby traps and things put into the wire. Grenades in a tin with a string attached to the grenade, and they would trip over that and pull it out and the grenade would explode. We used to do these preparations daily, and on one occasion my platoon sergeant and I were out in the wire just towards dusk putting out these booby traps when two American starfighters came across over the position, and we thought, oh, are they going to bomb the Chinese position? But in fact, they mistook our positions for the Chinese position. Having gone in, they came back and dropped napalm on us. Luckily, their aim wasn't very good, and the two napalm bombs shot right across our, over our position and into the small valley behind us. And we had one casualty in my platoon caused by the chap jumping into his trench and burning himself on his fire where he was brewing a cup of tea. Otherwise, no casualties at all, but it could have been very, very nasty if they'd actually hit the position. Napalm is not a nice thing.
What did it look like when it exploded?
Well, you see the bomb toppling down. There's no real... There are no fins on it. And it just topples down rather sort of like a large canister. Hits the deck and explodes and the flames all go forward. So if it lands in front of you, you're probably going to get burnt. If it lands behind you, the flames all going away the other way, so you're okay. But as I said, it lands in a little valley behind the position, and no one's hurt at all.
Do you know the date on which you were wounded? About?
Well, it must have been it was July.
July 52.
But I couldn't tell you the date.
52.
51. Oh, sorry, 52. Yes, 52.
How much useful information do you think you gathered on these recce patrols?
Well, some of it was quite useful in so much that one found out positions that had been improved.